Happy Holidays from the Webcomic Beacon.
With your hosts, Bess and Tanya.
Yes, we're back with another episode of the Webcomic Beacon. Sorry Tanya can't be here right now, but in her place for now at least, we have Joel Fagan from Australia with us.
Joel Fagan.
Hello, Joel.
Hello.
We have our topic this week is webcomic website designs. And since you have a great tutorial site and webcomic website design is one of them, we thought that would be great to get you on the show, and unfortunately Tanya couldn't stay up this late, but it's probably like, what, the afternoon for you right now?
Early evening, yeah.
Early evening, yeah. It's 2 a.m. here. So so let's go ahead, and we have a phone call that I had with a couple of friends, so let's play that.
Listener tune in.
On the Skype phone, I have Witchy Bunny and her fiancé, Dopper. I was wondering if you guys had any ideas or comments or suggestions about this week's topic, which is webcomic website design. Like things that piss you off about how somebody did a site and makes it inconvenient to enjoy the comic itself or the main page.
You mean like how they buried a site three or five links into an actual URL? Yeah, that kind of pisses me off.
Or when they just have one huge... They have their comic. It could be 5 pages long at this point. It could be 100 pages long, 200 pages long, and that's just it. There's previous, first, next, latest, and that's it. There's no navigate. I mean, imagine a comic like BMFA with no way to search through it at all. There are too many webcomics that are like that, that have no way to search through them.
Like an archive, KFA, or...?
Yeah, well, like an archive, but there's no... You have... Let's say, you know, for a long time, Penny Arcade was that way. Was you had however many hundreds of strips of Penny Arcade, and the only navigation features you had were first, last, next, previous, today. And those are the only features. Somebody popping into the comic, you know, like I did when I first started reading Penny Arcade, there was no archive feature. If I wanted to read 10 strips and then go off and do something else and then come back, I had to go back through those 10 strips. There was no way to jump to a chapter.
Right.
So, now, many comics like DMFA and Jack have that feature now.
You can't complain about my web design because you designed it, Fest, so...
Well, I made a simple design for you.
You made a very effective design.
Yeah, I don't even know. Do you have an archive?
Yes, I do. As a matter of fact, I have a archive button that leads to each chapter individually and each act. So you can go to the beginning of an act, or you can go to the beginning of a chapter. It's your choice.
Yeah, I guess I haven't thought about that before. I usually think of just like homepage navigation. I never quite thought about like an archive, like listing out the chapters. But that is a good idea and something that people should definitely be including on their webcomic homepage or website altogether. Well, some good points brought up there. I'd like to thank you both, Witchy Bunny and Dopper, for calling in.
All right, thank you.
My sentiments exactly as far as actually making sure you have an archive. What do you feel about their concerns?
Oh, it's really a no-brainer. You could get away with it if you've just started, you've just built your website, you've got maybe 5 comics, 10 comics, but it's something you need to put in fairly quickly, yeah.
Yeah, and yeah, I didn't think of it as first. I didn't think of it at first, but there are a few places that are like that where you don't even notice that where the archive is or that you have to backtrack so much. But I've noticed on some, I think... Maybe not Smack Jeeves, but or might have been Drunk Duck. But it's like if some of those automated sites, if you don't know what you're doing, you're going to have a crappy first page. And I think Drunk Duck was one of them where you'll have the main page and there'll be no first or there'll be no previous. So you have to like, then you'll have to go into the archive page or go into their drop down menu to figure out, you know, where you are and where you want to start reading.
I never read any comics on Drunk Duck. There's nothing against Drunk Duck. Right. I just never found a comic I liked, but that rings a bell. Yeah, I seem to remember that.
Are there any? Do you have any? As far as like the automated sites, do you have any things you want to point a finger at?
This is down to Comic Genesis and Keenspace, who have popularized this. I loathe the calendar archive. I hate it. That's when it comes up. It's got months and days, and every day is a link to whatever comic happened on that day. And it tells you nothing useful. I mean, it doesn't tell you what chapter, what's going on,
right?
What comic number. It's just this big block of dates. And if you want to find a particular comic, you're throwing darts at the screen.
Yeah, riding by the seat of your pants there. I remember, even especially if the comic has had like a hiatus or even a particularly long hiatus, then you have to like backtrack through a bunch of empty months in order to find like the last comic that was updated.
Yeah, and there's these comics which update once a week, and it's a waste. It's spending all this HTML, all this download time to show you all this information that's irrelevant and wasteful. And it's just unfortunate that Keenspace and Comic Genesis have both used that as the default. I really wish they hadn't.
I know Drunk Duck has a drop-down menu where it basically goes in line the number of the strip and the title, which is a lot easier to navigate, even though I don't particularly like drop-down menus.
That's actually, that has a separate problem. It's better, but one of the things I do with a new comic, and I suspect other people do, is I go to the archive page, and I open the first 50 comics in new windows or new tabs in Firefox. I walk away and come back when they're loaded, and I read them. And you can't do that with a drop-down list box.
Right.
And you can't do that with Flash, actually, if you have a Flash website, as Alpha Shade used to be.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, you can't open the links in new tabs, and you can't download all the comics in the background while you're doing something else. You have to click next, wait for it to download, click next, wait for it to download. You have to sit there the whole time.
That might be something to make sure you view the page and view the ads instead of just, quickly zooming through it, maybe. I don't know.
Alpha Shade has changed its website, but I don't think it used to have ads. I don't think it does now either, but I think they just wanted to do it in Flash because they have a great artist on that, on that comic. And I'm pretty sure that artist did the design as well, and it looks gorgeous. It's just, it has a few problems like that because it's Flash.
Have you ever read the webcomic? It's kind of like a Flash webcomic, Lizzie?
No, I haven't.
Well, it's like multiple panels, and you hover over a panel and then you click it, and then there'll be some sound and some slight animation going on. Text bubbles will pop up. So it's kind of like pictures in motion, because they'll like take static pictures and they'll move them around, zoom in, do pan, video pans. And I just want to point out this site as far as bad design, because unless you have like a really huge resolution on your screen, I guess, it all comes off as pixely because it's Flash and it's resized to fit the site in somehow. So it's kind of pixely to view.
Yeah, unless you make the pictures in Flash, it pixelizes them really badly.
Right. Are there any webcomics that you want to point out as having a little bit poor design that should probably have a facelift?
No. The only one I had was Alpha Shaded. Mm. It had a few problems, but they've changed the website, and it's really great now. But I should point out that for the most part, when I'm talking design, I don't worry about how it looks.
Right.
Because webcomic people are amateurs, they're hobbyists, they're not graphic designers.
Right.
I'm usually more concerned, and my tutorials are more concerned with usability, not getting in the way of the person who wants to come and read the comic. And Alpha Shade was a good example of that, because it really wasn't a nice-looking website, but it had these problems as far as using it is concerned.
As far as, I know something that Tanya and I were talking about is the location of the navigation buttons, the first, previous, next, and today. She was saying that there should be one's on the top and on the bottom. I'm saying, why not just have them on the bottom? Because when you're done scrolling down reading the comic, there you are to continue. What are your thoughts on how and where the navigation should go?
There's an argument for top and an argument for bottom. And my view is they're pretty small. Put them in both. And the arguments are, if you have them at the top of the page, if you have someone who's skipping through the comic quickly, mm-hmm. trying to find a particular strip, the arrows or the navigation buttons are at the top of the page, and they don't have to scroll down to reach them.
Right. Actually, I recall doing that a couple of times.
And if they're at the bottom of the page, of course, that's where you finish reading the comic. So if you're actually reading the comic, you get to the bottom of the page, and you don't have to scroll back up to the top.
Right.
So there's an argument for both, and I recommend doing both. One at the top and one set at the bottom. They're usually pretty small. They don't get in the way.
Well, I know on your tutorial, you have the small, just basic, you know, DVD machine arrow buttons.
Yeah.
And personally, I don't like those too much because they're so small. I like to being able to quickly zoom my mouse over and click and make sure. Because on the websites that I work with, I actually have them, you know, fairly about half the size of what you have as an example on your site, actually spelling out the word previous and next, even though it may be a little redundant since you only may need arrows, but that may be go ahead.
I have to confess, that tutorial and those arrows were made when I was working in a much lower resolution than I currently am. I think I was probably still on 800 by 600 resolution, so they would have been quite large when I made them. I would probably make them bigger now.
Oh, that's right. Speaking of resolution, that's a good point to bring up. I don't think anybody is on the 640 anymore. I think most people are 800 by 600 or the 1024 and above. But some people still tailor their sites for the 640, and a lot of people still have theirs available for the 800 by 600 size. Mostly it has to do with the width. And I noticed that basically a lot of people really are now doing that redesign jump for the 1024. What are your thoughts on this?
The official minimum that you're supposed to design websites for in the website design community is 800 by 600, last I checked. But my view is that people who read webcomics are generally a fairly computer-savvy crowd, and you could probably go for 1024 by 768 without any real problems. I'm not sure if my tutorial actually says that or not. It needs updating. But one thing I found interesting recently, Mozilla Firefox, the browser,
mm-hmm.
just brought out a beta of their new version, which is number 3, and it allows you to zoom the entire web page in or out. Pictures.
Oh,
text.
Wow.
It used to just do the text. Now it does the pictures. So the website looks the same, it just gets bigger or smaller. As soon as, you know, Internet Explorer, and I think Opera already does it, as soon as the other browsers have this, resolution is irrelevant.
That's
it doesn't matter. You can zoom in or you can zoom out. So
that's pretty good.
Hopefully within 5 years, resolution on web pages will not be an issue. It will simply not matter.
Well, aside from the few rare comics that make a very horizontal scrolling type of web comic, which I've seen a couple of times, it probably wouldn't work for those.
It still would, because you can zoom in and out
as much
as you like. So you could just make it a little bigger.
Right.
But no, you wouldn't want to zoom out so the whole thing's on the screen. It'd be a line.
Let's see here. Talked about resolution and... Let's see here. Oh, I was thinking... are there any sort of... I was going to ask if there's any... I already asked if there were sort of websites that you would want to point the finger at, but are there any sort of common, quote-unquote, mistakes that you've been finding from now and again?
Yes. There's a big one, which I blame Penny Arcade for. Penny Arcade, they can do it. They can do this. They have a legitimate reason. But lots of people try to copy Penny Arcade, and they don't have the same reasons. And what it is, it's putting a news post on your front page.
Right.
The people are coming to the website for a comic. So you want to give them the comic on the front page.
Right.
You don't want to get in their way. You don't want to give them an extra click. you just want to give them the comic. Otherwise, because with web pages, you have, I think, about 2 seconds to grab someone before they close it.
Right, and if you're looking for a web comic, you know, yeah. and you get a bunch of text right away, it's like, nah, then where do I find the button for the comic? And
exactly.
It, granted, Penny Arcade did that on
Penny Arcade is an exception because it's a game site.
Right.
It has more than just the comic. It's the analogy I usually use is that it's okay to have news on the front page of a newspaper. But
right.
You don't want to have a comic on the front page of a newspaper, and you don't want to have news on the front page of a Wolverine comic. So Penny Arcade can get away with it because they're more than just a comic.
Right.
But too many people try to copy it and copy Control-Alt-Delete as well,
right.
which doesn't have quite the same excuse. And it's a bad idea. You want your comic. That's the most impressive thing you've got. It's large, colorful, attractive, and it's what they came for. Give it to them.
Well, is there anything that we may not have gone over yet?
I don't,
on your site, you talk about 56K. I think a lot of people, and the way it's going to be in the fairly soon in the future, I guess, it's going to be some sort of DSL or broadband where, I guess, image size doesn't need to be so much of an issue.
Dial-up is becoming less and less of an issue, which I'm very pleased about because comics are large artwork, which take a while to download.
Mm-hmm.
The trouble is, I don't live in America. I don't know how many people have dial-up in America. I need to look it up at some point. But there is still a fair percentage. I think you'd probably still want to keep it in mind for now, but give it 5 years, and it probably won't be an issue.
Going out, is there any words of advice you want to give out to aspiring webcomicers and maybe webcomicers that probably should relook at their website design?
I think to sum up, probably most of what's in my tutorial is just make a professional-looking web page over a gorgeous one. And by that, I mean have it neat and tidy. It doesn't have to look absolutely amazing, just you know, neat and tidy. You have everything in the right places, not too much clutter. You don't try and stop the person from getting to the comic, like, you know, with news posts or a title page. Just keep it clean and professional. And that is a matter of care and attention. It is not a matter of, you know, graphic design skill. And again, you know, a lot of webcomic people are hobbyists and they don't have that skill. So yeah, just don't worry too much if the website doesn't look absolutely fantastic. Just keep it professional and usable.
All right, this has been Joel Fagan with us, helping us out for the Webcomic Beacon. And you can find his website, his tutorials at between-worlds.com/tutorials, and we'll include that in the notes. Joel, thanks once again for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
All right, now it's the next day, and we have a special guest for you today. In fact, it's a special co-host that's back with us, Tanya. Welcome.
Hi. How are you doing?
We're doing all right. You might have heard a little bit about what me and Joel were talking about. But
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Before I let you say anything, we have a couple more listener tune-ins.
Okay.
Listener tune-in.
This is a robotic representation of Lord Pandar of www.cryptome.com. As far as websites go, the great Panda One thinks that writing a 10-page backstory of your setting and characters is lame. If you can't work it into the story proper, it's obviously not that important. Either that or you don't have the skills. Also, forget about having comment boxes. They will be spam-big style.
On top of that, we also got an email from Diana of Jinxville.com. She writes, "It's annoying to try to read a comic archived using Blogger or LiveJournal or any other online journal tool, unless that comic is a journal comic that's sorted by date. So don't do it. For normal gag-a-day strips or long-form narratives, it's wiser to go with one of the free archiving systems specifically meant for webcomics. They're easy to find through Google or through recommendations on forums. Basically, present your comics in the least confusing and frustrating way as possible. And hey, if you have a short story, a good thing to do is just to put the whole thing on the same page so you just scroll through and read with no clicking. but I'm starting to ramble. General rule, the less clicking, the better. All right, that's some good listener tune-in. It's good to get some more. What do you think about what Lord Pandar and Diana were saying?
I disagree slightly with the comment box comment that Lord Pandar made. I had a comment box up for, I think, 5 or 6 months and never had any spam at all. I did eventually put up a forum just because I was getting so much, you know, there's so much talk that it made it somewhat unreadable. and, you know, that's a maybe thing too. Sometimes forums work and sometimes they don't. It all depends on how much traffic you're looking for. But I've had more problem with spam in the forum than I did on the comment box. As far as the email is concerned, I definitely agree. MySpace is one of my biggest issues. I don't like comics on MySpace, and I've recommended to several comic artists that put them on the blog on MySpace that they move anywhere other than that.
Navigation is such an issue with that, especially I've seen some comics hosted through Blogger, because then you get like this little, usually a thumbnail of it, then you got to click on the picture, and it's just, it's not a way to mainstream the visual pleasure of, you, I don't know what, you know what I'm trying to say.
I do.
It interrupts the viewing pleasure of the comic. There we go.
You want to be able to read a comic online the same way you would read it at home. You want to be able to turn a page. Right. I've never gotten a book home and had to put down that book and pick up another book to navigate to another page and then put it down and start over again. Right. And that's pretty much what you're doing when you're posting a comic in Blogger. You're making people go far out of their way, especially to go back into the archives and start from the beginning. And people won't do it.
Yeah, and the other thing, what Diana was saying, if you have like a short story, like, I don't know, like 8 to maybe the max, like 20 so pages to a single like comic idea, mm-hmm. you know, like a short story comic. I have seen, like, on her site, she has an example. I think her latest production uses that, and you basically just scroll down, so it's basically seamless entertainment. I think Amber of Panel to Panel does that with her No Stereotypes comic as well, at least by chapter, to break up her long continuously updating comic by chapter like that. Mm-hmm. And it really does help a lot when you want to you know, view a story with, you know, just keep getting into it. So that very good listener tune-ins. And I think we're going to close off part one of the show with another casual rambling.
Brett Hanley with Casual Ramblings.
Mr. J. Madison of Baltimore writes, "Dear CN, my readers are always complaining about how hard it is to navigate my website. They also say that my fuchsia and chartreuse stripe background is offensive to the eyes. Can you help?" Well, J. Madison, yes I can. The first thing you have to realize, and you seem to be well on your way, is that your readers are the enemy. The minute you give them convenient access to your site and your comic, they'll immediately start bitching about other things. Why don't you update regularly? Don't you own a spelling dictionary? What is that supposed to be in the third panel? Some kind of tropical insect? Believe me, you're better off without them. What you want to aim for is a site with so many bells and whistles that it is impossible to navigate any of it, but the sheer mass of random words in your text raises your Google score into the millions. Every image should have an alt text. Every button should link to a Flash or PHP routine, even if the button doesn't currently do anything. While I'm on the subject of buttons, it's a good idea to make sure no one knows exactly what your buttons do. Instead of a first button, try using a photograph of baseball legend Buck Weaver. Switch places on your back and next button so it's possible for casual visitors to get caught in an unending loop between two comics. And don't forget to have several buttons that just point to various versions of an under-construction page. Always remember that the main point of your website is to get click-throughs on your Google and AdSense ads. Be sure to showcase them prominently. If you have to hide your comic behind a double wall of ad pages, so much the better. Bright colors draw the eye, so use lots of them, regardless of such girly concepts as compliment or matching. Fuchsia and chartreuse are perfect. May I also suggest FF blue and yellow text, and FF red with black text. Brightly colored animated GIFs can add that last bit of punch to a drab website. So remember, there's no such thing as too many. And don't forget to include a 20-minute flash animation opening screen that has nothing to do with the plot or theme of your comic. Everyone loves those. They're even better if they include loud and annoying but incomprehensible sounds. If you follow these simple steps, Jay Madison, I'm sure you'll soon see those reader complaints diminish to nothing.
If you have an idea for a segment for the Webcomic Beacon, send an email to webcomicbeacon@gmail.com. If you have some of your very own music that you think would go well with the show, also send us an email. We really do want to hear your feedback on this week's topic, next week's topic, or how well we're doing, so please leave a comment on our site or send us a message or audio file to webcomicbeacon@gmail.com.
The Webcomic Beacon is hosted by Zephyr.net. Free hosting for free thinkers.
Last week we were promised an interview with Matt Scherer of BadlyDrawnKitties.com. That didn't happen, so here he is this week.
Introducing Matt Scherer.
I'm now with Matt Scherer of BadlyDrawnKitties.com. Hello, Matt.
Hiya.
Where are you hailing from?
I am hailing from the Vancouver area of British Columbia, Canada.
Now, you've been working on Badly Drawn Kitties for how many years?
I guess if you count strictly chronologically and not the extended down periods, it would be getting on to 6 years now.
Wow. And
it started in February 2002.
Why did you decide to start making a webcomic, namely Badly Drawn Kitties?
Well, it happened with a friend of mine named Ed, who would be better known to anybody who read Badly Drawn Kitties as Nakashi. He's a real person, Ed Vinance. And the two of us sort of liked, we were fans of webcomics, particularly Penny Arcade. And we liked the idea of creating our own comic. And at that time, he had a girlfriend who was a very good artist. This would have been around the summer to fall of 2001.
Okay.
And we got the idea for this. Basically, the short story is we just liked the idea of doing one. We got the idea of doing a comic strip that was written by the two of us and drawn by his girlfriend. It was called Breathing Room, and it was his character Nakashi and my character Lucy living together, and just the and also his girlfriend's character, whose name escapes me, I'm afraid. Just living together and having, you know, wacky adventures or whatever. I believe one comic got drawn, and then his girlfriend inexplicably broke up with him and vanished. So after tooling around with nothing for a few months, I finally decided, oh, what the hell, I'll just do my own. At that time, it was there was Comic Genesis, which was at that time called Keen Space, mm-hmm. and anybody who wanted one could just get a webcomic. And so I just said, oh, what the hell, I'll apply and I'll make my own. And I figured I won't care how it's drawn. I'll just write it good and just throw it up there, and however it looks, and I don't care. And I got the name Badly Drawn Kitties from a musician named Badly Drawn Boy, and there we go.
Well, how long did it take before your comic started really taking off? Like, how many strips into it do you think?
It took a few months. What happened, there were a couple of things that caused it to take off. One, okay. There was a comics – you know how a lot of comics – there's a lot of webcomic lists where there's a little thing that says vote for this comic, and then
right.
It has a list of all the – there was a Keen Space – I think it was called the Keen Space Top 100 or something.
Okay.
And I went on to that and actually got pretty close to the top by use of cunning buttons, inviting people to spank Lydia in order to vote.
Oh, I remember that image, yeah.
Yeah. It's still – the image is still somewhere in one of the old comics, actually. So that was the one thing. The other thing was that this would have been 2002, as I said.
Mm-hmm.
When I went to EtherCon 2002, through my friend at the time, Jane Ayler, I ended up meeting a lot of other – like I actually already had some furry artist friends. Like the first person I ever met at a convention was Malcolm Earl, who is better known in the furry fandom as Max Blackrabbit.
Right.
Zigzag's creator. Mm-hmm. Anyway, at that convention, Anthrocon, through Jay, I met Eric Schwartz of Sabrina Online and a few other people. Dutch, David Kopenhever of Misty the Mouse. And so it was through those connections I kind of – like a link – I believe shortly after that, a link to Badly Drawn Kitties showed up from Sabrina Online, and that never hurts.
Right.
So I guess the point where it would have started to take off would have been around the summer of 2002, after a few months, after I started to get some higher profile publicity for the comic.
Basically saying that, hey, check this out, I like it.
Yeah. That's basically it. I mean, in Keen Space, there are so many and now it's Comic Genesis.
Right.
And there are just so many comics. I don't know if Comic Genesis has like tightened their grip on who they allow or what since then. But at that time, there were literally hundreds of comics on Keen Space. And it would be very hard to actually find a specific comic without looking for it.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd have to rely on publicity from other websites in order to get anywhere, because otherwise you would just sort of sit there and no one would ever know about it.
Right. I mean, when I first started reading web comics, I started with the Penny Arcade and VG Cats, the very mainstream ones. And I remember seeing looking through VG Cats links, and Badly Drawn Kitties was in there. So that's how I started finding out more
there
about
you
other
go.
Stuff. So
today, I believe VG Cats is the comic in. I believe in Badly Drawn Kitties logs, VG Cats is the comic that is the number one source of. Referrer, exactly. The number one referrer overall is the Belfry webcomics list, I believe.
Oh, right.
But VG Cats, I believe, is the number one other comic that refers it, which is strange because I've never met Scott Ramsamare. I've exchanged email with him once, but that's the extent of it. He basically just found Badly Drawn Kitties all by himself and put up the link all by himself without telling me.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, so, it was cool when I saw that. I was like, hey.
Well, after receiving all like the nods from the creators, well, what do you think has kept readers interested, that kept them there? Obviously, they get the link, they go. But what do you feel has them staying with you?
I would have to say the writing. I think it's hard for me to, you know, say what I think is best about myself, but I think it would be the writing. Badly Drawn Kitties doesn't really have a lot going for it other than the writing of the comic. The art isn't much to look at. I mean, it got better. I mean, at first it was not much to look at. I don't like looking at like the first year or so of Badly Drawn Kitties, but I think it was the way that it's written. I like to think that I write funny comics.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, I guess I was writing stories that were all right, too.
And certainly there's a lot of character attraction as well. I mean, it's not just writing. One thing that kept me in was the interactions of the characters. Like, these people are funny. I like these people.
Yeah, well, it's a really basic formula that I use, which is that Lucy is the comic one.
Mm-hmm.
She's just kind of goofy and says whatever she wants and has fun. And Lydia is the straight man, so to speak.
Right.
And yeah, in the recent strips, it's kind of been stripped down to those two characters.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other, like, you know, I have Sally, the tattooist who works with Lydia, and she's just the really uninhibited one who doesn't really. She's not as goofy as Lucy, but just, you know, she's just, you know, she'll just do anything once.
More of a questionable intrigue. By the way, is she actually a demon?
She is on Halloween.
Well, okay.
That's the best I can offer.
There's been some suggestions to otherwise. And speaking of characters, I have to bring this up. There's a story about Lucy, Jay Naylor, and yourself. Care to explain?
The abridged version is that I started using – we before I started Badly Drawn Kitties, before Jay Naylor started his comic Better Days, mm-hmm. We had the two characters, Lucy. He's used Fisk as his personal character for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Lucy was sort of mine from when I started in the furry fandom. We sort of – the two of them – we sort of decided through some other means that Lucy and Fisk were brother and sister. And then when I started the comic, I worked Fisk in there.
Mm-hmm.
About a year later, he started Better Days, and he used Lucy in there because the idea was it was going to be Fisk's younger days, and Lucy was involved with that as well.
Mm-hmm.
So for a year or so, we were sharing the characters, basically. There was Lucy appearing in Better Days and Fisk appearing in Badly Drawn Kitties. Jay and I eventually had a falling out,
mm-hmm.
and he decided that it would be easier for him to just claim the Lucy in Better Days as his own character rather than acknowledge her as mine. He didn't really consider Badly Drawn Kitties to be canon with Better Days,
right?
Which in his mind means that the Lucy characters are not the same, and particularly the Fisk characters are not the same.
Okay.
And so he went into his website that the Lucy in Better Days and Badly Drawn Kitties are not the same. Took away any reference to Lucy being a character other than his own creation, mm-hmm. and just ran with it. Legally, he's allowed to do that. You can't copyright a character. You can trademark a character, mm-hmm. but it's not a character. A broad concept like a character is not covered under copyright laws. Like where any
well, unless you're like really specific, kind of like Disney and Mickey Mouse, where it's clearly defined, right?
Well, yes, but if you, I'm not certain of this. I'm not 100% on this, but I believe that Mickey Mouse is not copyright Disney, but a trademark of the Disney company.
Okay.
There is a difference there. Like a specific image can be copyrighted, but not a concept.
Okay.
And so the concept of Lucy is public domain, basically. I don't think it's particularly moral to just take a character and claim that it's yours, but, you know, from a legal standpoint, he's well within his rights to do that.
It's like extended parody almost.
A little
suppose,
bit, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I still get the odd person saying, you know, is there a relation between Lucy, your Lucy, and Lucy from Better Days? The worst is, I actually did a comic about it, the worst is when people ask if my Lucy is from Better Days. Like, there's an online role-playing area called Tapestries, which is where Lucy was initially created.
Mm-hmm.
And it still happens on occasion when I'm there as Lucy that somebody will ask if I'm the Lucy from Better Days, because Jay Naylor has the bigger name. I mean, he was a big name in the furry fandom for years before Badly Drawn Kitties or Better Days, and so his comic has gotten a lot of readership from that name,
mm-hmm.
and so it's a new person. The average new reader, their first exposure to the Lucy character would likely be from Better Days. And so it's sort of the default position that some people take that, it's Better Days. You're Lucy from Better Days. And then I have to tell them, like, no, there's this other comic that's not quite as well known, but that was the one that came first.
Right.
Yeah.
So Badly Drawn Kitties has had a bit of a hiatus, essentially after I think it was Lydia and Dirk got married.
Yeah. That was, in retrospect, that was sort of the shark jumping of the comic. I had been kind of sputtering for a while there. I had been finding it harder to keep storylines going. It was harder to write stories. Now, that would have been in about 2004. 2005, I believe, that stopped. In 2006, I brought back the comic briefly. And then it petered out again.
You were trying to start a different storyline, probably a little bit more serious?
Well, my initial plan was to do a more serious sort of storyline. And then I suddenly realized that was not the comic that Badly Drawn Kitties was. To be honest, what really occurred to me was that it was turning into Better Days.
Oh, boy.
And so I scrapped that idea and then sort of brought back Badly Drawn Kitties as it used to be in 2006, but I still couldn't quite get it going. What I've discovered now is that the trick is to write individual comics. Like for my writing style, mm-hmm. individual comics work better than prolonged stories. Because for a story, you have to come up with a story first and then try to wedge jokes into it. Whereas the style that I have now where I do individual comics, I can just do the jokes. Right. And I don't have to worry about bending a story to fit them.
You used to actually have some storylines back in the day when how did you come up with those storylines? Were they just like you just kind of got an idea and you ran with it for several more strips or...?
Usually what happened, it was actually really poorly planned. Usually what would happen was I would think, it would be neat if Lucy/Lydia did X. And then I like draw a strip where they started to do X. Didn't have it planned out where it would go or anything. I just sort of went by ear, comic by comic. And then as a result, a lot of the stories just kind of tailed off at the end because I hadn't really planned a complete middle and end to them, which is a really bad way to write stories and is why it didn't work in the end.
But still, some of those were favored concepts for a while, and maybe you couldn't end them right, but it still got people going up and saying things.
It took me a while to figure it out, but what I realized was that the prolonged story comic as opposed to the single gag comic did not match my style of writing. It worked. Right. I work a lot better when I'm drawing jokes first and can worry about story some other time.
It seems to be doing good for you now since you kicked up the comic again and you're now really starting to update.
Yeah, I mean, I have not missed updates for non-technical reasons, I believe, since I restarted the comic. The only reason I've stopped is because I've had to get Kat from the airport or had to get a new computer or something.
Right.
Well, so, yeah, it's working out.
Well, awesome. Well, Matt, thanks for being with us here at the Webcomic Beacon.
No problem. Can
check out Matt's webcomic at badlydrawnkitties.com. Matt, thanks again.
Yeah, no problem. And it's kitties as in cats, not as in children. Some people, when they hear it, kind of get it wrong for the first time.
We'll get that in the show notes then.
Okay.
All right. Thanks again.
Yeah, no problem.
That went a little bit long, but actually, you know what? I even thought of some more questions. Doesn't that always happen?
Of course.
Well, anyway, let's move right along. I think we got a webcomic review.
And now, webcomic reviews.
This week I'm reviewing Goth Bunnies, which reached its 100th strip this week. You can find Goth Bunnies at www.skulkingninja.com. Before I start anything in earnest, I'd like to say that when I first sat down to read through Goth Bunnies, I was expecting something far different. Now, as the writer of a slice of life comic with a gamer comic name, I'm not going to criticize. I just want to make it known that though the comic may sound like an anthropomorphic gag-a-day emo comic, it's not. Rather, Goth Bunnies is a lighthearted fantasy story with dozens of well-blended elements and a lot of promise. I must admit, however, that 100 strips into this fairly fast-paced magical mystery, and I'm still a little confused. I understand the basics of the story, but I'm a bit ambivalent about the direction. The three main characters have been explored with some depth, but it seems as though the other characters are only just now coming into view, leaving the identity of the antagonist or antagonists completely unknown, and the direction somewhat fuzzy. Until a dozen or so strips ago, it wasn't even terribly clear that there would be an identifiable antagonist. A bit of attempted drowning and some magical aggression points to the existence of a villain, or at the very least a larger conflict, but you're just not quite sure what flavor. Now, I'm more than willing to entertain the notion that I'm just being impatient. I'm sure it won't be long until a few pieces slide into place and my confusion evaporates. But a little taste of clarity a few strips back would have eased some of that anxiety. All of that aside, I do feel like I like the story so far. The dialogue's well-rounded, the characters feed off one another nicely, and each one is adding a new dimension to the story. There are touches of humor and hints of drama. All in all, the writing is very convincing. Artistically, Goth Bunnies is quite impressive. The character designs carry a nice blend of realism and style, with postures and clothing choices doing a great deal to accentuate their very different personalities. Done entirely in black and white, the line art is crisp and very professional. Backgrounds are simple, well integrated, and a quick scan of the archive shows how the artist has grown over time. Anyone curious for a look behind the scenes would do well to take a look at the tutorial section, which is a welcome addition and very easy to follow. The website itself is pretty bare, but adequate. The cast page isn't quite complete, but does cover the main characters and doesn't give away the plot. The about page is definitely worth the read, but be aware that it's not so much about the comic as it is the history of the artist as it relates to the comic. Overall, I give Goth Bunnies a thumbs up. The story is progressing nicely, it's skillfully done, and I have high hopes for its future. The Beacon will also be auditioning for a resident webcomic reviewer for a weekly role in our show. Until then, we can accept guest audio reviews from established webcomic reviewers as well. Email us ahead with questions and for details.
Thank you, Tanya, for that. And now,
let's hear some webcomic impressions.
We got a request to give our impression of the webcomic Clit and Pecker. Clit and Pecker is not porn in the least, but it can be pretty suggestive and is certainly not that innocent. But in tune with this week's topic, this comic for sure does the first thing a webcomic website should never do. The homepage is not much more than a news post or a splash page. The comic should be on the homepage. Anyway, the comic starts with a girl named Clitavia on a grade school class trip to a chicken ranch. She meets a chicken that has just hatched, and the chicken says that it doesn't want to become food, so the little girl helps it escape. A few suggestive one-liners later, the talking chicken and the girl are at her house. I suppose a bit of a It Followed Me Home sort of deal. Still, the chicken exhibits childlike curiosity and naivety, all formulated into a one-liner or suggestive joke. Not a strip for children in the very least, however, the artwork does seem to suggest otherwise. The art looks like it's designed for children with its sort of cut-out look with gradient shading, a style choice for sure, but nothing masterful as of yet. With some time, it can look much better and refined, but it still gives a sort of visual appeal. Still way too early to see if this comic will go anywhere, if this formula will work, but if you are curious, go to cnpcomic.com. Do you have a young comic? Think you can impress us? Send us a link and we'll take a look at it and we'll give you our impressions on the next show. Well, this now concludes the Webcomic Beacon. If you want to find anything that we were talking about this week, you can find all links in our show notes. And if you want to get involved with the Beacon, well, actually, Tanya, would you like to tell them how?
People can try calling in with about a 30-second audio file pertaining to the week's subject at hand. State your name or screen name, then your site or your URL at the beginning. Understand we may usually cut that part out, but leave it in just in case. We also can't guarantee all call-ins will get on the air. Send it to webcomicbeacon@gmail.com. You may also be able to leave a voicemail by finding Fezworks on Skype.
You are also free to write a simple email with questions or comments, and if people want to get a jump start, the topic for next week will be on conventions. Also, if you have an idea for a regular segment for the show, send us an email and pitch your idea.
And for something fun for newbie webcomic creators and so on, if you've hit a webcomic milestone, let us know. Have you hit 100 comics yet? 200? 300? Or maybe you hit your first full year of updates? Second? Third? We'll try to post or mention all of them in our next show.
For now, this episode is over, but the Webcomic Beacon plans to bring you guests or interviews along with a new topic each week. For now, I'm Fess.
And I'm Tanya.
That's all for the Beacon. Be sure to tune in next week.